Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I'm your co-host, Andrew McPeak. We're already having fun, Tim.
We already are.
So today we're talking about a subject that was inspired by a movie that we both saw. And I thought before we really get into it, we need to talk about the cataclysmic thing that has happened, which is Tim Elmore, the great popcorn aficionado, has made a really fundamental change in his popcorn opinions.
Well, I didn't know you were going to bring this up.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a significant thing. Yeah. We got to talk about
it. So I do love popcorn. It's my favorite food in the world.
Which is so funny. I've never met anybody whose favorite food is popcorn before.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of a kind.
Yeah. You are one of a kind. That's for sure.
So years ago, I really enjoyed Regal popcorn, the Regal Cinemas. Mm-hmm.
Are you a butter and salt guy?
I am, but I'm cutting back on that.
Okay.
So my wife and I do two different containers because she really likes the butter and I'm really, as a diabetic, I should dial back. I have to. Yeah. And I want to be a good example for all children everywhere.
Yes.
So I used to like Regal. It was fresh. It was good corn. And I feel like it's not as good as it used to be. So I've switched over. My preferred popcorn is now AMC.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if listeners have an AMC cinema nearby, but I noticed you can put your own butter on. So you can put a little or a lot.
Yeah.
And then you have the salt. And then they always have those little yellow salt.
You like that one.
Sprinkle that on just a little bit. So it's not quite as many calories, but it's still very tasty.
Man, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And if you do have an AMC near you, if you have the ability to choose where you go to watch your movies, you might. If it's for the popcorn's sake, you should choose AMC.
I have one of those returnable buckets. I mean, yeah, so we bring the bucket in.
Is that the one you buy for like 2018?
Well, it was a gift. It was a gift to me. But at Christmas, it was my Christmas gift from my daughter-in-law. But I do bring the bucket
what
in.
What a perfect
for
gift.
$4.95, I get a 55-gallon drum of popcorn. So, you eat it all. But enough about me.
I've sat next to him in a movie theater before, and he's like, I really shouldn't eat all this.
Yes,
or he'll ask you, do you want popcorn? I'll be like, I'll have a little bit. Okay, we'll take the largest one you have.
That's true. And if I have a little or a lot, I'll eat it all. That's one area of my life I'm not as disciplined in.
Yeah.
So, there's a
habitude called discipline bridge. I'll tell you about it later.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right.
But so anyways, we digress.
Yes.
We're here to talk about a movie that we both saw, that we both really enjoyed, about a classic icon of especially the 20th century.
Yeah.
And that was Fred Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I remember I was 8 years old when it started, so I was a little bit older. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing it and thinking, wow, this is different. And then, of course, my two children, both millennials, grew up watching Mr. Rogers. You grew up watching what?
I did, Mr. Rogers. Born in 88, and I think his show was on until 2001, I believe. I definitely remember watching it as a kid. So
now, to set the stage for this, would you like me to sing Would You Be My Neighbor?
You know, it sounds like a good idea, but it's really about protecting your voice, ultimately.
Oh,
I know you have some events coming up, and as much as I'm sure our listeners would love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what you don't know is, when I was in college, I was a backup singer.
Really?
Every time I got close to the mic, they said, backup.
Okay, I love your joke so much.
Thank you for bringing that into my life.
I love that.
All right. Back to Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. So, but there was a documentary that came out recently called Won't You Be My Neighbor, about the life of Fred Rogers, particularly how he got into, doing his show for kids, why he did it. And then some of the bumps in the road I feel like he experienced along the way.
So it's a documentary. So you have to get ready for a documentary.
Yes.
Again, there's
it's
not
a totally
lot of,
different mindset.
That's right. But boy, I took my phone in with me. And even though they say turn your phones off in the cinema, I had my popcorn and I had my phone and I took notes and I wrote down incredible lessons that I feel like I picked up as they took us through the 60s, 70s, 80s, the leadership lessons I learned from Fred Rogers.
In fact, if you really start digging into what he did, and I was blown away when we saw this this movie, is I think he might have been one of the best and definitely most innovative leaders of the 20th century.
Yeah. And the least likely.
Oh, totally.
That guy wouldn't be influencing anybody.
Definitely.
He sure was.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I feel like you pulled out some really great insights. I got excited as we were talking about this conversation and getting ready for it. So walk us through the seven sort of insights that we can get from Mr. Rogers.
Good. So the first leadership lesson I feel like I picked up was be sure your leadership addresses a tangible problem. Sometimes I think we have leaders, even young leaders that we work with, that just say, I just want to be the president. I just want to be the leader. But why?
Yeah.
Fred Rogers never planned to be a leader, I don't think.
Yeah.
But when he saw the problems that existed in the 1960s, and he saw this new thing called television emerging as a cultural impactor, he thought, I'm going to leverage that. So he had planned on, after college, going on to seminary and becoming a Presbyterian minister. But he said, nope, I'm pushing pause on that. I'm going to use television to impact the lives of kids. So when I say meeting a real need, here's what I mean. His show started in 68. Mm. You don't remember 1968.
Not that well. Yeah, I don't remember it very well.
That's right. But you read your history book, right?
That's right.
So 68 was a very tumultuous year. There were riots in Detroit and other places. There were campus shootings.
Mm.
Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr., and Robert Kennedy were both assassinated. So this is the year that his show comes out. He actually did an episode where he explains to children, what's assassination?
Mm.
What does that mean?
Which is difficult subject to
and
talk about.
And he talks about war because the Vietnam War was now being televised. So he saw the need of culture and thought, I need to unpack this with children because I bet there's some families that don't even know how to talk about this.
Yeah.
I love the fact that his leadership was addressing a real need. We teach at Growing Leaders that leaders solve problems and serve people. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah, and that kids learn on a need-to-know basis. Meaning,
absolutely.
If you haven't connected your conversation or what you're talking about or your leadership to a real issue in the real world, it's going to be difficult for them to feel like they can follow along. But I think what's so powerful about that example you shared is a lot of people would have assumed that kids couldn't understand assassination.
That's right. Yeah.
And what he believed was, it's not that they can't understand it, it's that we're not connecting with them and explaining it to them in a way that they can understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's a totally different approach to leadership.
Well, yeah, I think he proved that kids can be traumatized when they see tumultuous things going on around and they don't understand.
Yeah.
So better to talk and say, sweetheart, let me explain what this is going on. So the big question I'd like our listeners to think about is, how does your leadership actually meet a tangible need? What need are you meeting? What problem are you solving? And if it's just about a badge and a position, I think we need to rethink our leadership.
Love it. I love it. All right, what's number two?
Number two, I want to do this, Andrew. I've always wanted to do that. Okay.
The paper is thrown.
That's right. Number two, I believe your most natural leadership will stem from your own past pain. So you and I both know that many people go into the jobs they go into. Counselors become counselors probably because they came through some pain and maybe saw a therapist.
Yeah.
Fred Rogers went through his own pain as a kid. While he was in middle school, he gained a lot of weight, and he was bullied quite often. And I'm sure, in fact, the movie even brought this out, that being bullied just a bit, he thought, I need to help kids if they're on the other side of that. Navigate that.
Yeah.
So it was his own past pain that probably drove and motivated him to do what he did. I love what he said. I have a direct quote from him. He said, and it was in this movie, no matter what our job is, we are all supposed to be repairers of creation.
Love that.
I love that.
Yeah.
So leadership needs to be life-giving, repairing something that's not right. And for his, in his case, it was, we got to help kids navigate this very, can I say it again, tumultuous time that we're living in.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, when we talk about how leaders begin their journey, the fourth one that you talk about is leaders being summoned to lead.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think in some ways, we're all summoned by things that have happened to us in the past. Our past pain, the issues we faced, and the desire that I think all great people who go through difficult things have, which is, I want to make sure nobody has to experience what I had to experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Or at least that if they experience it, somebody's there to help walk them through it.
So when I started Growing Leaders, I started it from my own past pain. I wasn't taught leadership until I went to work for John Maxwell.
Mm.
Now, I did have leadership roles, and I did try to stumble through what I was doing and develop these images in my head as I was learning lessons. But I really feel like, now that I look back, I probably started this, and I don't claim to be some great entrepreneur, but it was out of my, I don't want a kid have to go through not knowing what to do when they're young and they have to lead.
Which is one of the best reasons to start something or do something.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's great.
So Andrew, my question on this one is, for listeners, how does your current leadership style stem from your own past pain? I think our best leadership, our most genuine leadership, will come from our own journey.
Yeah, ourselves. And that's probably going to be a difficult thing for a lot of people. Yeah. But I think at the same time, we need to realize that that's where the highest degree of authenticity and leadership will come from.
No doubt. Yep.
Personal experience.
All right. So the third leadership lesson, if I can put it that way, from Fred Rogers is never fear lobbying for your deepest values.
Huh.
What I learned a few years ago and then saw on this movie, because they had footage about it, was shortly after the program started, his Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood started, PBS was in jeopardy of losing $20 million and probably having to shut down. That was a lot of money in the 1960s.
Yeah.
So PBS brought some attorneys and said, let's go before Congress to lobby for the money we need to keep. So attorney after attorney was reading statements that were very well put, but they were reading statements. Mm-hmm. The congressman that was hosting the statements said, I'm tired of hearing, I don't want anybody to read anything else. And it was Fred Rogers' turn. So he got up and said, I do have something that I've written down, but I'm going to trust you because this is about trust. I mean, can I trust you? Yes. You know, I mean, now he's teaching this Congress.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this to you, and I'm going to speak from extemporaneously from the overflow of what I feel and think. And he went into this short discourse on how we must help kids the way the program was helping kids.
Mm.
And when he got done, that congressman said, looks like you just earned yourself $20 million.
Yeah.
But it was this... Fred Rogers, the most meek and mild man ever, is lobbying before Congress to keep that show on the air. And I don't think it was because it was about money. He thought, this is a pulpit to do work that we have to do.
It's a perfect illustration of one of our habitudes that I know you and I both love, our velvet-covered brick, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody who's soft and kind on the outside, but tough on the inside.
Yeah.
Somebody who says, I am not giving up on the things that I value. Yeah. I'm always going to be lobbying for those things. Yeah. And I think he did that so well. Such a great picture of that.
One of the reasons I love our team at Growing Leaders, and then I love what I love going on inside of me, I think we're about this job because we actually believe it's really important.
Yeah.
You know, this is lobbying for our deepest values, and I think that just gives us extra energy that maybe a paycheck couldn't do.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
So my big question here is, are you doing anything so valuable that you'd lobby to keep it alive?
What a great question.
Yeah, I think school principals, teachers, coaches, we need to be asking that question. Am I doing something so valuable? Yeah. I'd lobby for it.
At least one part of your job, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, lesson number four. Practice the law of reciprocals. Now, this is my own little statement here, so let me explain what I mean. When Fred Rogers launched into children's television, he wasn't the first children's program, but he was among the first. But when he looked around at all the programs going on for kids, he noticed there was lots of noise, lots of running around, lots of pies in faces. Remember, he talked about that.
That was like a classic thing.
And they showed the pie in the face. And he said that's what they were doing because they thought that's what will keep the kids' attention.
They were just trying to get their attention, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Fred Rogers said, I'm going to do the reciprocal of that. So just like 3/8, the reciprocal is 8/3, you know, in math.
Yeah.
He did the opposite of what the other kids programmed. So if you look at a Mr. Rogers episode, any episode, low production value.
Yep.
Very simple, slow moving. In fact, if you remember, there's a traffic signal. The yellow light is flashing. Slow down. Because he already saw in the 60s and 70s, we're going too fast.
Yeah.
I mean, we need the yellow light today especially, but he saw it 50 years ago.
Yeah, and I would imagine he was probably assuming some of the kids have very fast-paced, tumultuous lives.
Yeah.
Especially maybe in inner-city context or different other things that he was trying to slow down there.
Absolutely.
Too.
So I think our leadership needs to, if I can pull the lesson out, we need to be looking around and saying, what am I doing that's not like everybody else that actually meets a new need? It's doing something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the idea is there is like what's happening in culture what are we missing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
We're getting a whole lot of this.
Yeah.
But probably we're not getting a whole lot of the opposite of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you and I are working on a Generation Z book. And remember what we said from the beginning? What's already written? What can we applaud? And what can we do that's going to complement, not imitate that?
Yeah, we want to step into where there's a need, where there's a hole, where there's a gap. And the same thing is true when we lead the next generation. There are things that are missing in their lives. And if we're wise enough to see that, we can step in and meet a need that they don't even know they have. Maybe.
Absolutely, no doubt. So I've taught this principle for years. Leadership rises based on providing the scarcest resource.
Mm.
So Fred Rogers, nobody thinks of him as a leader, but he was,
yep,
because he did everything TV wasn't doing, and it so met a real need. So I guess my big question here is, what leadership are you providing that provides a scarce resource that isn't being provided 50 other places? Why don't we stop trying to imitate Hollywood and YouTube and actually be genuine,
yes,
people in front of kids every day,
yes,
to teach them?
We, yeah, could almost stop right there. That's so good. I love that.
Well, thanks.
So, but let's keep going anyway.
All right, so
throw your paper.
Yes, there we go. All right.
All right, number...
That wasn't quite as good as the other one, but
no, it's all
we're
right.
going to have you, to live with it.
Yeah, keep practicing.
Okay, all right.
Number five.
The fifth lesson is, if you can't replace what's broken, learn to redeem it.
Mm.
Now, what I meant by this one, Andrew, and I welcome your comments on this one because I think you have a lot of insights I don't have, but instead of just saying what most Americans were saying at the time, TV's just awful, I can see where it's going, it's going to be horrible, he said, no, let's use TV knowing it's neutral as a piece of technology,
yep,
and let's redeem it. Let's do something constructive with it.
Love it.
So Fred Rogers, Sesame Street, you know, Blue's Clues, lots of television programs have come out over the decades where they followed his suit and said, let's redeem this. What could be awful with murders and, you know, whatever else is going on there, we won't even list it. And let's do something that actually is educational.
Yeah, there's, yeah, such a great parallel between this and social media today. Because I know when we talk about technology and social media, especially with parents, one of the first thoughts that they have is like, you know, it'd be easier if we just didn't have it at,
yes,
all.
Yeah.
And our biggest pushback is that's not the world we live in.
That's right.
If, yeah, you're hoping to raise your kid in a world without social media, good luck.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
that's the world we live in. So the question is not, can we get rid of this thing? The, mm-hmm, question is, how do we use it in a redemptive,
yeah,
way?
That's exactly right.
And that's the challenge I think is in front of us. There is no better example of how to do this than Fred Rogers and what he did with television.
I absolutely agree. So my question here is, how can your leadership either replace or redeem something that's destructive?
Love it.
I think every leader that leads the next generation needs to be asking that question.
So, yeah, good.
Good.
So good.
All right, two more to go.
Let's,
number six. When you lead many people, think of one person.
Hmm.
Fred Rogers used to even say this. When I was aware that millions of children were watching, it would be overwhelming. And he was human. He'd get overwhelmed. His wife even said sometimes he'd get overwhelmed and he'd be so down on himself because he felt like he wasn't doing as much good as he should. But he said, what kept me real and what kept this show personal was I would imagine one child.
Hmm.
And he even said it didn't matter which one, boy, girl, black, white, doesn't matter. I had to imagine one child. And if you ever watch an episode, he's talking very personally,
yes,
to Anna, your wife who loves this program.
Yes,
loves,
exactly,
this program. She felt like he was talking to her.
Because he says you.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not y'all.
Exactly.
Or whatever. So I love this. And I think my friend Andy Stanley says this. I think it's so good. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone.
I think
sometimes a leader will be, well, we got too many people. We can't do that for everybody, so don't do it at all.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yes.
Fred Rogers did it on TV. We need to be saying, if I got 1,200 kids in my school, could I just serve one today?
Yeah.
And maybe a different one tomorrow? Instead of getting overwhelmed, why don't we just take a step? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yes.
That's right. Okay.
Very good. I was going to say one piece at a time. It'd be slightly off. But
yeah.
Yeah. I'm so
you
sorry.
You need to get this
that.
Right now. Okay. All right.
It actually reminds me of, I was a part of a leadership program in the city of Atlanta a few years ago. And I remember realizing that there was a connection I was developing with one of the kids that was there. And he and I were able to spend more time outside of that leadership program.
Well, yeah.
And you might have thought that I was like picking favorites. But mm-hmm. what I found is the conversations I had with him gave me context for
yes.
how to talk to everybody.
Yes.
And I actually felt like I became a better leader of everyone because I spent time
I love that.
That I couldn't spend, you know, with everybody one-on-one with this young man. So I think that it's a yep. little bit of a paradox. You
it
know?
Is. Yeah.
If we're able to get more personal with one or two kids, what you'll find is you actually speak to all
yeah.
of them.
That one student was your proverbial focus group.
Exactly.
For the rest.
Exactly.
Yeah, no yeah. doubt about it. Yeah. So I love the fact, one more thing on this one, one more piece on this one. In the movie, if you remember, some of the kids that were now adults looking back on it said, because he talked to me personally, even though I know he was talking to millions, it made me trust him.
Mm.
I think leaders can learn a lesson from that. When you speak to one person, even if it's a class, or you pull one student aside and talk just to her or him, it earns trust. Something happens when we focus in on one.
I think
it's
that's
powerful.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
So the big question here is, as you lead larger teams or groups or classes, do people feel that you speak directly to them? That's awesome. I think that's just something we got to keep in mind.
Great question. All right. I think we're on the last one.
All right. My last one, number 7. And I love this one. I saved it to last on purpose. Find a place where your leadership is seen as a calling.
Yes.
Now, I realize that can be seen as a spiritual term, but I hear the word calling used in almost every space these days.
Absolutely.
Where my work is not just a job, it's a work to be done. There is a work to be done.
Yes.
It's a mission, a sense of mission.
A purpose, yeah.
Yeah. So Fred Rogers called his parents when he graduated from college and said, I'm not going to seminary. He eventually did go to seminary, but he said, I'm going into TV. And he talked to them about, I think I can do more good. Mm. So isn't that cool?
Yes.
I think I can do it. Not earn more money.
Yes.
Although he may have. It was, I think I can do more good here. And I remember being moved by this. Toward the end of his life, he was no longer on TV. He was really on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. He talked to his wife and he just said, sweetheart, do you think I'm a sheep? And of course, he's referring to that passage of scripture where Christ talked about the sheep and the goats. And he said, I don't even know if I'm a sheep. And of course, she said, sweetheart, if anybody's a sheep, it's you, you know. But here's this, I'm getting teary now. Here's this meek and mild man that just was on TV trying to do some good, but it was a calling. And even though he said, I got discouraged so often, there were a couple of times he almost went off the air just thinking, I don't know if I'm doing enough good. Mm. He was compelled to stay on because there's another kid that probably needs what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think as we're leading the next generation, if we aren't authentic, if we aren't purposeful, if we don't feel a call for the action that we're doing, they can tell.
Yeah,
you know,
no doubt about it.
And I think if we can't act out of that sense of purpose, then we're not going to connect with them on the same level.
Yeah, I agree. So my big question here is, listeners, is your leadership role a mere job or are you pursuing a calling? I feel like that's important. Every week, not every day, but every week, I think as I'm driving, this is still my calling. You bet it is. Mm. I'm more fired up than ever to stay at this. We may change how we do it. One day I'm going to turn it over to people, but I'm telling you, it drives me to do what I'm doing.
I love it. Well, I'm sure that people listening to this are thinking about their memories of Mr. Rogers, whether they've seen this movie, and I really would suggest that you do go see this documentary. Or they grew up watching him.
Yeah.
They remember the lessons that they were taught. We'd actually love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd love for you to tweet Tim or Growing Leaders. We'd love for you to email us, podcast@growingleaders.com. What were some of the things that you learned from Mr. Rogers that you feel like are still sticking with you today?
I think that
would be really fun to hear those things. So I know every time I talk about this, just tons of memories come back, which is really cool. But thank you so much for this conversation today, Tim. I think it's pretty clear. He was a leader.
Yeah.
Whether or not he was confident in his own leadership ability, we're gaining so much from him even today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So anyways, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. We would strongly encourage you, if you have questions or different ideas for what we could talk about, send us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. If you could rate the podcast, that's really helpful for us too. It helps other people discover what we're doing here. And I think hopefully if it's helpful for you, it'll be helpful for other people too. If you are leading the next generation and feel like, man, I'm not really sure how to navigate all of these changing environments, if you want to be like Fred Rogers and say, hey, this tool in front of me is an opportunity, not a challenge, or maybe a challenge, but I see it as an opportunity, then we want to encourage you maybe to pick up this resource we developed, Marching Off the Map.
Yeah.
It's helped a lot of people that we've talked to sort of think through how to connect with students.
Yeah. Andrew, you and I worked on this together. Our whole point was in a new day, in a tumultuous time, which we're in today.
Yes.
It's not unlike the 60s.
Yes.
We've got to offer a resource that's going to help them. So I do highly recommend, even though we worked on it, maybe because we did, we know what's in it. It's helping folks, and if it help more, we'd love that.
Yeah, I really think so. So if you haven't picked that up yet, go to marchingoffthemap.com. You can get it there. Thank you so much, Tim, for leading us in this conversation and pulling these insights from Fred Rogers. We learned a lot. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next time.